collaborating.
Sure.
Congratulations, guys. Do you think, as a director, the time period, it's already kind of dangerous time period, well, compared to, you know, how we live nowadays, because we have foods available anywhere you want and stuff like that. Multi-layering, now you add the supernatural that's going to kill, you know, this family or is draining this family. Do you think that added a layer to the scariness or the horror in the film?
Yeah, certainly. Like, I, you know, yeah, you can pass around. People asked why, you know, why did I choose 1630 rather than, you know, later during Salem or whatever. First of all, I couldn't have afforded that scope, but yeah, for an English settler in the beginning of the Great Migration, you know, they were much more vulnerable because there was, you know, just, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. You know, there was experienced farmers in England who come over here, but they, you know, the land in England had been cultivated for generations, and here it hadn't been, and so their crops were failing and all this kind of stuff. But the thing is, you know, what you have to understand is that in the early modern period, the real world and the fairy tale world were the same thing. So it's not just about, like, oh, you know, what if this, like, folktale idea was true? You know, for them, it really was true. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, innocent women accused of being a witch. You know, it's like, oh, I'm calling you a witch. It's hard to kind of wrap your mind around that. What does that mean? But to really understand that they really saw these women as, like, fairy tale ogresses, like, serious anti-mothers, like, capable of doing all the horrific things that go on in this movie. Like, that's what that stigma was. It wasn't nothing. So to realize the power and the brutality of that, if I can bring audiences back to the 17th century, like, and get inside that mindset and that worldview, then the witch, you know, can be scary, you know.
An interesting piece that I read was that the Satanic Temple of America has actually endorsed this film.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you mind discussing that a little bit, or your reaction to that, both of you?
I would like to say on the behalf of both of us, it's nice to have fans, and leave it, and leave it at that.
Yeah,
if you please.
No comment.
That's smart. Well, we touched on this earlier, where I was really curious because I love to read the credits, and wanted to know about the mental health counselor.
Yeah,
they said they didn't use one, but they could.
Yeah, I mean, no, if you look on credits of any film, they're there. I think that, you know, I understand why people are, like, looking at that. I was really, really lucky when I finally found the right investors that I could cast whoever I wanted in this film. And so I was looking for not only good actors and appropriate actors, but good people, because I knew that this set, this shoot was going to be extremely difficult. For the adult actors and Anya, they were going to have to, like, go to some really dark places psychologically, and they would need the support to, like, get them out. With the children, though, like, they need to be even more protected, but we didn't, you know, go to any dark places with them. You know, with the youngest kids, they had a Disneyfied idea of what the story was. And if you have a child, say, Lucas, open your mouth, don't blink, now breathe. Breathe a little faster, a little faster, a little faster, a little faster. And if you put a witch on the other side, he looks scared. But obviously, it's just, like, me and him and a camera and whatever. So it's like that kind of thing.
Anya, you're really wonderful in the film.
Oh, thank you.
And you're quite a young actress. So what brought you to this role?
I just started acting maybe a couple of months before, something like that. And I read the script, and it just... I don't know, like, this feeling in my body that I hadn't felt before, you know? I felt scared and panicky, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And going into the audition, I was nervous, and I was never nervous before. I'd not, you know, I'd always had a very kind of good attitude of, like, if it's meant for me, it's for me, and if it's not, it's just not. There's nothing I can do about it. But with this one, it was different. It felt more like this sort of sensation of, not only do I really want to tell this story, but I think I might actually do it okay. Like, I think I might, you know, be trustworthy enough to actually tell this story. And it's really informed how I read every script from now on. I'm chasing that feeling, and if I don't have that feeling, I really don't want to do it.
Ooh, here we go.
I'm glad you have part of the
Argentina side, because it seems the way you move your hands is so time.
I do.
And Spanish or something. Do you speak?
Spanish is my first language. I learned English 11 years ago.
Did you take classes or did you take anything?
No, we moved to London and I had to learn.
You take acting classes?
No.
Just natural?
I don't want to say that it's...
It's your talent.
Thank you. I just went to work. You know, honestly, my acting school's been sets and learning everything from that. And I actually almost think that that's the best kind of school. If you have, and I've been very lucky to work with really incredible directors.
He has a solid preparation.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's marvelous.
So how important was accuracy for you for this film?
Accuracy, you know, look, accuracy for accuracy's sake, like, doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it's like really easy for any director to, like, you know, really get excited and fetishistic about that kind of stuff. And certainly, like, my level of... knowledge has become fetishistic, truly. Like, I don't want to like exploit that on the screen. Like, I need to be telling the story. Unless there's a scene where Thomason's running around like looking at like the saw marks on the floor, like, you know, I don't need to be like showcasing that. But the whole point is that I can never expect an audience to actually be transported to another world without the specificity. Like, my notion is that, like, not only does it need to be like authentic for this film, and, you know, and have like the shots that are good for the story, but every single frame needs to be me trying to articulate a memory as if like I lived as a child in the 17th century and this was the time my father took me into the cornfield and we had this conversation. Without that kind of specificity, as if I own this personally, like this is my experience, like I cannot transport an audience. And so that, and if you're trying to be that specific, then you need to be that authentic.
Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of horror films? And if yes, what does your collection at home look like? Like, what titles?
I'm not like a typical like genre guy, mm-hmm. Just because like I don't worship schlocky stuff. Like, I just don't care, and I don't like films that are like too meta and self-referential. It just doesn't, like, that kind of stuff doesn't excite me, and I don't like gore and whatever. So, you know, but what it, like, horror films I own, like, I own The Shining, I own like pretty much every Dracula movie, you know, for better and for worse. and a lot of German expressionist silent films. I think I own Let the Right One In. What else do I have there? I mean, you know, I like to say that Bergman is a better horror director than most horror directors, you know, and like Cries and Whispers is pretty horrifying, powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
But,
about you, Anya?
You said evil takes many forms.
Well, the marketing people said.
Yeah. It's so ready for an idiot.
Here's one.
But, no, but it does.
But I'm saying my question is Stephen King, he had a dream about The Shining to write a book. And this dream made it immediately when he woke up, this is when he started to writing. So, I believe maybe someone over there who knows and never completed in his life something wants to give some or continue to give some advices or idea to.
Yeah, well, the dead speak loudly if you listen to them, you know, whether that's metaphor or not. You know, but I mean, I grew up in New England and you know, the woods behind my house definitely were haunted by the past to me as a child, and I had a real idea of the mythic past of New England, for better and for worse, and the idea of like living in a Puritan culture was like real to me, and you know, not that I'm trying to like, you know, riff off of your Stephen King thing, but I mean I had like my earliest nightmares were about witches. In fact, my earliest dreams are nightmares about witches, and I had nightmares about witches like up, you know, into my adulthood. And so this was again, it's something that's very personal for me.
Well, you're able to work out your angst with this movie now?
Funnily enough, and I didn't think of it like as a project like that, but I did realize that I haven't had a witch nightmare since making this movie.
So what did you ask
Anya about her in films?
My taste in films? Very not like this one, unfortunately. I don't like being scared. I'm not a big horror person. And actually, after watching The Witch, which is the first scary movie I'd ever seen, I went home like really kind of like puffed up with bravado. And I was like, I'm going to watch The Blair Witch Project because I've made one of those and I'm fine. And I was not fine. Like, I was very unwell for a very long time and it just wasn't good for me. But no, I grew up on like, I've got a lot of older siblings, and so I watched a lot of the movies that they watched when they were kids, and we had laser discs, and so they were, you know, big and important to me, and we only had like a set amount, and so those were the movies that I'd watch over and over and over again. But no, I love, if I was going to pick a genre that's sort of my favorite, it's coming of age. I love those stories, especially like something like Stand By Me will always be one of my favorite films.
And you're one of the few people that remember laser discs.
Yes. I love this. That was my job, man. I had to turn over every time. It was like, it was movie time.
The packaging, you get this big box.
It's the exact same thing that happens with records, where it's if you sit down and you listen to a record, it's not trivializing it. It's you're sitting down, you're doing it. On Friday night, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch my laser discs. Or on Friday night, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to listen to my records. And if you do that, it's not just music that's going on in the back of your head, and you actually make it a ritual or something like that. Makes it special.
Even the blonde boy, oh, he was so...
Harvey?
Brother.
Oh, he's wonderful. So talented.
Oh,
really,
you're talented to pick those.
I had a good casting director.
Yeah. Carmel's amazing.
It's important, but two had to pick, you know.
Yeah.
He can show you. I remember when I saw the first time Brad Pitt in an audition, and I said, oh, this is... But, okay, he brought there.
Thank you. Yeah, no, Harvey was great. He was great, and but that scene was a collaboration. I knew that his possession scene was super crucial, and we rehearsed it the most. And I'm extremely grateful to Ralph and Kate, who drilled with him a lot, and also his father.
Yeah,
you know, they were just working, because if that scene didn't work, the movie was just over from that point. You know, so.
Well, you just said now that this is a very personal experience for you, a lot of personal influences, and that brings me to ask, did you always want to be a movie director? Did you have these dreams as a child and think, I could make a movie about this? Or was it something maybe you developed later on, like watching The Shining and thought, wait, maybe this is a good medium for my own fascinations?
Like, I mean, like, it's not like I just, like, live my life, like, tormented by witches, like, you know, like, you know. But,
yeah.
And I definitely wanted to be a director. I mean, you know, this is like, you know, I pretty much always wanted to be a director. I mean, it's sometimes there's a period where I want to be a painter, a period where, whatever, but whatever. It's all stuff that's basically related. The reason why The Witch happened is because I finally made a short film that wasn't garbage. And some people were interested in potentially developing a feature with me. And I wrote a bunch of feature scripts that were super weird and dark and strange and just weird and arty, and no one wanted to make them. So I was like, how can I make a genre film that is personal? Like, it seems to me like in this climate, like, if I'm going to get a film finance, it has to be genre.
Uh-huh.
And so then I went back to New England, I went back to witches, and that was sort of assignment for myself.
Yeah.
And the lights, it was like, it reminded me of Latour. I don't know if you're familiar with
Of course.
The painter, you know,
I'm not familiar with Latour, give me a break. Listen, here's the thing. I am you know, classical painting is like huge for me. But look, if you put someone, you know, in 17th century clothing with natural light by a window, like, you have Vermeer. You know, if you put them in 17th century clothing with a single flame source and it's actually a flame, you get Latour. You know, you don't have to try to emulate that. It just happens, you know.
Yeah, I think that sometimes I'm not... Do you remember the Lincoln, the movie?
Which, what?
Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be a candle, a lighter.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was not giving me that.
But we use natural light and we use flame. I mean, all of the interiors are only lit by flame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you tell us real quick about the goat? Like, casting, well, did the goat cooperate with the, acting? Were there more than one?
There were supposed to be three goats. Mm-hmm. A bucking goat, a rearing goat, and a standing goat. Mm-hmm. Instead, we had one goat who wanted to sleep and attack Ralph, basically. That's really all he wanted to do. And I mean, I don't, you know, Charlie's
a goat.
I don't blame him for not wanting to, like, be in the film, but it was not easy.
Real quick, what's your next project and your next project after?
I'm working on a medieval epic right now.
And I saw something about a reimagining of Nosferatu. Is that?
I think
correct?
Because that just seems like really in poor taste and megalomaniacal and foolish that hit the trades.
Uh-huh.
Not to say that it might not happen,
yeah.
But it's in the future.
Right. Was hard to find the financial part for the movie?
Very. Yeah, very hard. But very hard.
Yeah, no, but I think me and Mia got enough.
So I once we did, it was great though, because I was waiting for someone who actually was going to let me do my thing, because people would said yes for a lot less, and I tried to find a way to do it for less. But if I couldn't actually recreate the 17th century accurately, if I couldn't bring over actors from the UK, if I couldn't do all these things, like, there's no point. Like, you know, just make some other crappy movie. You know,
yeah,
I don't care.
You're going to have a movie, do a movie with the son of Ridley Scott?
Like? I've done it. I filmed two movies last year, and I'm hopefully filming four this year. So, yeah, we're doing good.
Oh, looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. But you're really scared.